Mary Mark's Gospel. Let's just read some of this. It's a very long passage, but unfortunately the passage sits as a whole together. If you want to get through Mark's Gospel while you're doing, we'll maybe not read it all this morning. Let's read some of it now and then maybe some of it later if we get that far. Mark's Gospel, chapter 4, and verse 35. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." When they went across the lake to the region of Gerasenes, when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "Why, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Let's have a prayer. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for your gospel. Thank you for the story of Jesus clearly recorded for us. Thank you that these are words that are attested by eyewitnesses. They're true. And you really did live among us. So move among us here this morning again in all your fullness, we pray. Amen. You heard of the plastic surgeon who was asked if he had ever done anything outrageous, and he said, "No, but I've raised a few eyebrows." Well, in this passage, Jesus doesn't do stuff that's so much outrageous, although it is in the laws of this earth totally outrageous, the things he does, but they are astounding. And what the Gospel of Mark and what Mark really does here is to say, look, really get back to just one person. That's all it's about. One person, Jesus Christ. He's just finished a section on teaching in parables, and he's moved into this section on miracles, and there are four miracles in a row here. The storm, the calming of the storm, the healing of this demon-possessed man, the lady who has an issue of blood, who's been bleeding for 12 years, and the raising of Jairus' daughter. And out of all of that, you will find that Jesus is Lord of nature. He's Lord of the storm. He's Lord of the spirit world. He's Lord of sickness. And he's Lord of sorrow. The most sorrow that anyone could ever fear or dread, the loss of a child. So Jesus is Lord of everything. And again, this passage brings you back on each incident and on each story back to the very fundamental that people get to the end of themselves. And when they get to the end of themselves, that's when they come to Jesus Christ. They can be self-sufficient up to a point. They can try and do it. The world can try and do it for them. But when they come to the end of themselves, they have to come to Jesus Christ. Imagine, come with me to the supermarket. Not somewhere I like to go, but go down the cereal aisle. Just take a view down there and imagine what it would be like if Mr. Kellogg never lived. Okay? Now, my cupboard is full of Tesco reps, okay? But they're all based almost on Mr. Kellogg, all right? So instead of Cocoa Pops, I've got Cocoa Snaps and all sorts of stuff. And you can tell that I eat that. And then go down the chocolate aisle with me. Imagine what it would have been like if Mr. Cadbury never lived. Because Mr. Cadbury, he did all that stuff. And now there's all these copies of it. But imagine if Mr. Cadbury never lived. Now, you'll know my favourite stuff now would be in the cereal aisle, the chocolate aisle. Now, let's go down the crisp aisle, okay? Imagine if Mr. Tato never lived. Now, there's lots of different crisps now, but if I ask people of a certain generation in here, and you eat cheese and onion crisps, but isn't it every so often you just get a bag of Tato cheese and onion? And wow, that is life. That's the way it's meant to be. That is back to the very basics of it. Now, let's finish the diet with something else that's particularly healthy. Let's go down the drinks aisle. Imagine if Mr. Coke never lived. And there's all the different types there, and there's Tesco's own. But imagine if Mr. Coke never lived. Half of that stuff would never exist without Mr. Kellogg's, Mr. Cadbury's, Mr. Tato, and without Mr. Coke, our world would be a different place. Imagine if Jesus had never lived. Street down there in Hamilton Road with a Baptist church and a Presbyterian church and a Church of Ireland and a Methodist. Imagine if he had never lived. And imagine your life if Jesus had never come into it. Jesus is everything. And in this long passage of Mark chapter 4, verse 35, right through the end of chapter 5, which is verse 43, there are four things. And the first one I wanted to look at, and we're trying to get through this very quickly, from the perspective of Peter, or from Peter's point of view, he's Lord of the storm, Lord of nature. Who is Jesus Christ? We sang it there, Emmanuel, God with us. Lord of the environment. We have the department of the environment, but this is Jesus, the Lord of the environment in which we live, nature. Everything this one person spoke and it came into being. And he's here in this boat with these men. He's supreme over everything. There's no one like him. He speaks and creation comes into being. Revelation tells us in chapter 1, and we've been looking at that down in Kirkcubbon, that John heard a voice behind him like crashing waters. And the interesting line that comes after that says that John turned around. He said, I turned around to see the voice. Well, that is a strange statement. I turned around to see the voice. But this is the voice of authority. This is Jesus Christ. He is the voice that changes everything. Well, on a news on the news maybe a year ago now, I can't exactly say when it was, they showed a clip of this guy standing on the side of the road. And he was begging on the side of the road in America, and people would pull up and he would speak to them and he'd say, "Give me a dollar and I'll say something to you." And that sounds strange, but this guy was a radio presenter who had fallen on hard times. You maybe saw the clips of this guy. And when he opened his voice, he had the crystal clear voice, and he was ragged haired and a beard, and his clothes were torn, but when he spoke, it would have just blown you away. But Jesus' voice is far more authoritative and powerful than that. John says he heard the voice and it was like crashing waters. And this day Jesus is in the boat and there's a storm blows up. And we're going through this quickly because there's lots of detail and we can't look at the detail, but we spend a fortune in this country. I don't know about Lanzarote. I don't know if they have weather in Lanzarote. Do they have weather reports today? It's going to be sunny. Today it's going to be sunny. 150 days ago it rained, but today it's going to be sunny. In another 100 days it may rain again, but today it's going to be sunny. Now, I don't know if they do the weather bother in Lanzarote, but in this country we spend a fortune on the weather. We have weather men. And we have, to jazz it up a wee bit nowadays, we have weather girls. But what is that about? And we talk about the weather all the time. There's a song that says, "Everywhere we go, we always take the weather with us." And the weather is always with us. We spend a fortune on finding out what the weather will be like this afternoon. And we turn on the TV, and that didn't happen by accident. It cost thousands to pay that person and to get the report and everything else and all that equipment to find out the weather. So we can tell nowadays what the weather might be like this afternoon. Might. It's not always certain. But you've got to stop when the Bible, Mark's Gospel, records for us that Jesus Christ spoke to the weather and it obeyed him. As simple as that. If you don't get it as simple as that, you miss the point. The person who's supposed to be Lord of your life is the Lord of the weather, of the storm, of nature. And you've got to stop when you realize who Jesus is and ask yourself the simple question, is he Lord of my life? Because if Jesus isn't Lord of your life, you missed the point of your life altogether. In him was life, and that life was the light of man. Paul says, "In him we live and move and have our very being." If you're not living your life under his lordship, you're not living your life. You're living some sort of counterfeit, some sort of copy. You're living Cocoa Snaps and not Cocoa Pops. You're living Tesco Cola but not Coke. You're living Tesco Chocolate but not Cadbury Donut. You're living a copy. And that will never, ever, ever satisfy you. This is Jesus Christ, the Lord of nature. No one has ever, before or since, told the weather what to do, and the weather did it. Now, it would be great today if the people said, "It's going to be sunny this afternoon, but it started to rain," and Heller said to Andrew, "Go out and tell that to stop." Now, that's as stupid as it seems on that level, but as fundamental as it seems that Jesus Christ actually went out and said, stood up in the boat and said, "Quiet, be still." And the wind died down and it was absolutely calm. Peter is a legend. Peter's the greatest guy in the New Testament on one level. This is a guy who was a legend in his own life jacket, believe me. He was the fisherman and he was the leader. I'll tell you one thing. If he could have got through that storm that evening and it was getting dark, he would have got through that storm. But he came to the end of himself. And he and the disciples, who had weathered many a storm, went to Jesus and said, "Look, stop this. We're going to die. Do you not care?" They came to the end of themselves. That, by the way, is what faith is. Coming to the end of whatever you're going through in your life, the storms of your life, and saying, "Jesus, I can't cope with this anymore. Please deal with it." Do you know what he always says? Quiet, be still. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? Are his words to these disciples. Peter had prayed through many a storm, I'm sure of that. If you had been in some of the storms that Peter had been in out fishing on that lake, you'd have prayed. But do you know the amazing thing about this prayer this day? It never left the boat. His prayer never left the boat because the Lord of the storm was in the boat with him. Do you know what the New Testament teaches? That Jesus Christ, if you're a Christian, lives in you. Your prayer goes to him and he says, "Look, I am Lord of your life. I know there's a storm. It's not always as automatic as that, switching it off. But quiet, be still," he says to you. Do you still have no faith? Why are you so afraid? So Peter's point of view, the Lord of the storm. Secondly, there's this a very personal point of view. I was going to say from the pig's point of view because I wanted all peas, but I just thought, nah, it's just pushing it a bit far. But listen, it's a very personal point of view. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. What amazes me when I read this story was that there's a journey going on. This, someone in a commentary called this ministry around the lake, okay? But the interesting thing to me is that this journey that Jesus got his disciples in the boat to do, and the storm come up and he taught them something through being Lord of the storm, he goes across to the other side of the lake, and you know what? He meets one person. He deals with the catastrophe that is his life, and he gets back on the boat and goes to the other side again. He makes the journey for one person. So this is personal. Jesus here this morning is here for you, whoever you are. It's personal. He's here for you. You made the journey here, but he is here firstly and foremostly for you. It sounds very selfish, but on every single level, on every single person in this room, 100% committed to what your need is this morning, if you'll bow your knee to his lordship. And this is a personal story. Can you imagine how bad life has got when you live among the tombs? You ever read that stuff? They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. The man lived in the tombs. Evil is real. Jesus is Lord of the spirit world, we'll find out from this passage. But he's Lord of the evil. He's Lord over evil. Evil destroys people's lives. The fundamental issue, as I've said, is that people need to come to the end of themselves and all other resources and then come to Jesus. It's clear from this passage that this man had got all the human help that he could possibly get. Twice it says no one could bind him, and then verse 5, no one was strong enough to subdue him. Everyone else had tried to help him. I have no doubt that this man had tried to help himself. But self-help and the help of others, when it comes to the area of sinfulness and evilness, is of no help whatsoever. There's only one person can help this man, and the one person who can help this man made the journey through a storm that evening to land on that side of the lake to meet with this man. It's amazing that it's the Lord of the storm of nature that knows about this obscure man on the other side of the lake, living among the tombs, And the disciples don't even know why they're on the journey, but Jesus knows why he's on the journey, and he's gone there to help him. What's going on in your life this morning that nobody else knows about? What went on behind your closed doors this morning? This is your public face. What's going on privately in your life that no one else knows about? Maybe you've got all the help that you can try and get. You've tried to get through it yourself. But your life has absolutely crumbled. As devastated as a man who lives among the tombs and day and night cries out and cuts himself with stones. At the end of himself. That's a human condition. It's personal. And Jesus makes a journey to meet with this man. And this is a real world. It's not a world we deal with most in this part of the world. We don't talk about the spiritual world. If you go to Africa and parts of Asia, it's much more real, this world. But we tend to think of two worlds running side beside each other. The physical world and the spiritual world. In God's eyes, they're much more of an integrated world. There's just one world. And Jesus lives in that world, and he moves in that world, and that world knows who he is, and that world is frightened of him. Whatever has control over your life this week, in this world, this spiritual world, that you're dealing with, maybe privately, maybe you're getting help for it, Jesus knows about it. He's the Lord of that world. You'll never get that world sorted out until Jesus becomes Lord of that world. This actually is a huge story, because it's not just one demon that's cast out. I think this story is brought in here by Mark because it is massive. Who are you? Jesus says to the Spirit. And the Spirit, speaking through the man, because it has full control of this man's life, says, I am legion. Now, a legion is up to 6,000 Roman troops. Interestingly, when Jesus casts out the Spirit, or the spirits, they go into a herd of pigs, which is about 2,000 in size, the herd of pigs. What was going on in this man's life? Now, this story really proves that Jesus is Lord of that world. So whatever is holding you, whatever is destroying your life, you've got to come to Jesus and on your knees get help from him. He's the only help. And then later on there's a transformation, because the pigs fly off or go down into the pigs don't fly. But the pigs go off and go down into the sea. And the people actually just are so frightened, they run away and they tell the people in the village, and they come out to see what's happening. And they say they saw the man sitting there dressed and in his right mind. What a transformation Jesus makes in people's lives. Whatever's happening in your life this week, make no mistake, if you're messing with sin, that's a spiritual thing. If sin has got a grip on you, there's only one word for it. Evil. That's what is gripping you. Evil. And Jesus is Lord of the spiritual evil world. If you want to get sorted out, dressed in a sense, and be in your right mind, you've got to come to Jesus. Well, let's try and have a quick look at the other two stories. When Jesus, verse 21 of verse 5, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers named Jairus came there. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed against him, And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Mark brings up the story of Jairus, and then he leaves it on hold, Jairus and his daughter. And he moves into this story about a woman who has a sickness. To prove the point that Jesus, this Jesus, who is fundamental to your life and to my life and to every human being that ever lived, Emmanuel, God is with us. This Jesus is Lord also over sickness. He's Lord of the storm. He's Lord of the spiritual world. But he's also Lord over sickness. There was a verse, there was a line in one of the songs we just sang there that talked about angels and the world to come. And in Revelation 21 it says this: he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. That's the way life is going to be. One day, it's going to be perfect. We'll live in heaven, or live with him, which is heaven. And everything will be perfect. But for now, it's not perfect. From the perspective of Peter was the storm, from the perspective, a personal perspective, as the man who had a spiritual condition, this really bad spiritual condition. This is the perspective of a patient. From her point of view, he's Lord over sickness. Sin and sickness always go together. I'm not saying that your sin causes sickness. Don't misunderstand me that I said that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when sin entered into the world, sickness came along with it. I'm not saying that your particular sickness is caused by your particular sin. Some cases that's true. Often that's nothing to do with it. But sin and sickness always go together. And Jesus is here to reverse all of that. So one day everything will be perfect. But in the meantime, we have sickness. And this is another personal story, but let's talk about her from the point of view of a patient. Sickness can really get you down. Sickness can just totally destroy your life. Sickness that doesn't change for 12 whole years. She had been to the doctors, verse 27, and she had spent all her money, but she didn't get any better, she only got worse. I rang the doctors this week. Let me just put that into context. Do you ever feel as a sick person here this morning, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that are sick here this morning, that you are a small little thing in a big system. And wow, trying to get anywhere in that system is difficult. I rang the doctors this week because I hadn't slept for 5 nights. I was a wee bit desperate. I should have went to Jesus because I'd come to the end of myself and I shouldn't have bothered the doctor, but I was only human, so I tried him first, or her. And the receptionist said, no, you can't see the doctor. I said, look, I never bother the doctor, but this is an ongoing thing. Well, if it's an ongoing thing, you definitely can't see him, because these are emergency appointments. I said, well, I haven't slept for 5 nights. Is that an emergency? She said, no. If it's an ongoing thing, it's not an emergency. I said, I'm quite desperate here. Could I speak to the doctor? Well, I'll speak to the doctor for you. And then she did ring me back, and that was good. But she said, sorry, the doctor won't see you today because they have to prioritize. That's a nice word, prioritize, okay? Now, I'm only mentioning that because actually they rang me back in the afternoon and they said, look, there has been a cancellation. Can you go and see the doctor in Portavogie? And so it was all sorted out. I'm perfectly well now. He sorted everything out. Not really, but it was a good ending. It was a better ending to the story than I thought. But sometimes, If you've got an ongoing illness, and some of you will know what I'm talking about, it is very difficult to deal with the system. This poor woman had dealt with the system for 12 years and got nowhere. She only got worse. And you know what? I love these words. When she heard about Jesus, she decided, I'm going to see him. And you know what? The story doesn't always end this way for us, because sickness is with us and sickness stays with us. But this story tells us that in the end, Jesus is Lord over sickness. How long your sickness has been going on, I don't know. But he told you, Mark pulls this story out just to show us that in the end, the things that destroy our lives, storms in life, spiritual battles, sickness, one day Jesus will show himself as Lord of all of that. That's the Jesus that is fundamental in your life. Don't be dealing with copies. Just don't settle for being a Baptist. Don't settle for being a Presbyterian, a copy. Don't settle for being Church of Ireland or Methodist or whatever it is. They're copies of the fundamental thing. You are a Christian, a follower of Jesus Christ. It is him that is Lord over the storms, Lord over the spiritual world, Lord over sickness. She just heard about Jesus, and she went to him, and she touched him. And the power that changed his life flowed out of him into her, and she was healed. Strength went back into her body. She felt new. She was a new person. I'm glad of the health service we have. If you got me wrong there, don't get me wrong, I'd be a lot worse without them. But if you're dealing with sickness, it may never go away in this life. But listen, one day the sadness and the tears and the fear and the pain and the sickness is going to be gone forever if you have put your life into the hands of Jesus Christ, the Lord over sickness. And lastly, very quickly, the Lord over sadness and pain and death. We can think of nothing worse, surely, all of us sitting here, if we're parents, than the death of a child. His name stuck in my head because his name was Ben Reed, who died last week, or maybe the week before now, just recently, at Newton Ards, a young boy. Imagine the news that went back to his dad, his mum's gone, your son's dead. That just is mind-blowing to me. It's a parent's worst nightmare. I spoke to a parent recently. I'm not mentioning his name because someone might make the contact, but he went home one day and his son was dead. And I spoke to him recently and I said, how are you? He said, no change. He says, it's 18 months, you know. And it was like it just happened there now. The man was a shell. And see, when you read this story, you've got to get into the mindset of that. Because this man, Jairus, had come to the end of himself. Do you know what? His job was everything to him, I reckon, because he had risen to the heights of being a synagogue ruler. And the synagogue rulers were not big fans of Jesus, but I'll tell you one thing. When his daughter was dying, the job took second place. He came to the end of his ambitions about his profession, and he realized who Jesus was, his only hope, the end of himself, and the synagogue ruler came running, and he fell at Jesus' knees, at his feet, and he said, look, my daughter is dying. Please come and touch her. And the words in Greek are that she would be saved. And then there's this delay. And there's this gap where Jesus deals with this other lady in between. And by the time the lady's dealt with, it's too late to deal with this girl, with this man's daughter. Because people come from his house and say, "Don't bother the teacher anymore. Your daughter's dead." And here's the words from the Lord of death, the Lord of absolute devastating sadness. It says he ignored them. And he said to the man, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Now, it doesn't always end that way in this world. But this passage is here to teach us that Jesus Christ, who is fundamental to your life, don't sell for any copies, he is fundamental to your life, will one day put everything right. If you've lost a little child, one day you'll be reunited with that little child. I lost a parent as a child, and that was tough, but I have no idea what it's like to lose a child as a parent. But this passage teaches us that Jesus Christ is Lord of life. So he's saying here, it's not all over. If Jesus is at the center of your life, and even the delay happens and the worst happens and that person dies, Jesus is Lord of life. There will be one day when those in Christ, pray for your children, make sure they're in Christ. Because even if you should lose them, one day when the great resurrection happens, we will meet him in the sky and we will all be together again. Isn't that amazing news from the New Testament, that it isn't all over, even though it seems that it's absolutely all over. One day, it'll all be put back together by who? This one person, Jesus Christ, Lord of the storms, Lord of the spiritual world, Lord over sickness, that thing that destroys our lives, and Lord over death. That's why the Gospel of Mark is powerful in people's lives, because you have got to meet this person and you have got to make him central, in fact, Lord of your life. It won't work out any other way for you if you don't. Let's have a prayer together.